Third case for argument this morning is Illusta against Rubio. Mr. Mark.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm James Maher, the trial attorney for Mr. Rubio. He was hailed into federal court because he, rather than getting into a fist fight with his neighbor, he called the police. And as a result, he was subjected to a two-week-long federal jury trial. The issue before you is whether or not the district court, Your Honors, refused in granting summary judgment because there was no evidence presented before trial to prove that Mr. Rubio acted jointly in a conspiracy with the police to falsely arrest Mr. Illusta.
Once there's been a trial, though, whether summary judgment should have been granted really falls out of the case. You have to argue that a Rule 50 motion for judgment as a matter of law should have been granted, but we can't evaluate that without the transcript.
Well, that's not argued in the briefs, and I respectfully disagree with that because it's the duty of the trial court to evaluate the summary judgment motion.
But and, the point is, sometimes the train rolls on, and so once the train rolled on
train
to the trial, certain things are simply no longer contestable.
It's my position that when it's a denial of a motion for summary judgment for the defendant, that it clearly is.
Yeah, but the law in this circuit is very well established that once a trial has been held, the sufficiency of the evidence at the summary judgment stage is irrelevant. Right? Zip, zero, nada, doesn't matter. All that matters is the sufficiency of the evidence at trial. And as my colleague said, we can't evaluate that because you haven't provided a transcript of the trial.
Judge, Mr. Rubio couldn't afford a transcript. He didn't deliberately.
The transcript is part of the cost of the case, and if you thought you were going to win, the transcript would be on your opponent's dime. That's the way the system works. But in any event, it's not here. We can't evaluate the evidence, and we won't evaluate the sufficiency of the evidence at the summary judgment stage.
My position on that, Judge, is that, respectfully, that's not argued in the briefs. That wasn't addressed. But it's my position that the summary judgment motion.
Your position, but the law of this circuit is against you. You have not argued that the law of this circuit should be overruled. Indeed, you haven't acknowledged the law of this circuit.
Judge, I was a trial lawyer, and I, represented him at court, and there was no evidence at all. The briefs don't even argue that this man suffered emotional distress. My opponent doesn't even say that he suffered emotional distress. So the tort of intentional infliction of emotional distress just had no applicability to the facts of the case. I've cited my case law in the briefs, Your Honor. Really, there was no evidence. The case versus Maluski, this case that was relied on in the district court, doesn't apply at all. It's a motion to dismiss case. This is a motion for summary judgment. Briefed it and argued it, and it was denied. And we were subjected to a trial, and there was still no evidence of conspiracy or joint conduct from Mr. Rubio between anyone.
Yeah, but we have to have a record to show us that.
Mr. Rubio couldn't pay for the transcript. If we could have an opportunity to produce the transcript,
But you were already alerted by the order issued on April 15th from this court. Indicating whether the trial transcripts have been ordered, if not, whether you will be ordering, and that order actually goes so far as to say, because Rubio has raised issues for which the court will need to review the transcripts, he will suffer the cost of their absence. So that's April. This is now 6 months later, and then some. So this can't be a surprise to you.
Well, Judge, I interpreted your order to mean that the sufficiency of the evidence to support the verdict wouldn't be considered on appeal,
the
summary judgment.
Yeah.
I thought that the order didn't disclose that the summary judgment motion was going to be considered completely obsolete because we went to trial. That wasn't argued in the briefs.
Some research would have shown you that, I think.
Well, in any event, Judge. As I said,
And you can actually answer a mysterious question for me. As I looked at the jury verdict form appended to your brief, It looked to me as though Mr. Rubio prevailed on all matters except this intentional infliction of emotional distress point. So if that's true, then I don't understand why you spent so much time in your brief talking about under color of law and conspiracy. What was that relevant to?
You know, part of my position was it shouldn't have gone to trial on intentional infliction of emotional distress.
But he won. I mean, what can we do other than say you should win? I mean, there's on that point, we really can't make things any better for him than they already are.
Well, in answer to that, I would say a state law claim that should never have been presented to a federal jury
That's
got through, and the jury instruction.
That's a question of supplemental jurisdiction, and I don't think there's any doubt that which is measured at the time the complaint is filed.
Right.
At the time the complaint was filed, there were 1983 allegations in the complaint, and there, as very commonly is the case, there were some supplemental state claims. The district court concluded that those supplemental state claims were properly within the, quote, one constitutional case. So I don't think there's anything you can do to change the jurisdiction of the court.
Well,
the color of law is not a jurisdictional point.
Well, but the jury instruction that was submitted to the jury didn't accurately define the elements of intentional infliction of emotional stress anyway. And if the court had read my pleadings and my motion, it would have granted summary judgment, and no state law claim would have gotten to the jury. I defeated 5 out of 6 claims, but the one that should never have gone to the jury was the one that defeated my client. And there's a $20,000 judgment against my client because he called the police on his neighbor.
No, I can understand your client doesn't want a $20,000 judgment, but
right.
I guess we've reviewed what the problems are at this point.
Right. Also, in the briefs, there's some language about some ongoing relationship between my client and these officers. They were friends with him. These are completely false statements. There's nothing in the record. It didn't happen at trial. I tried the case. It's not in the record. So my opponent in his brief has said that there's evidence that was presented that wasn't. And arguments that these state law cases don't apply. Kahn is a case that's, directly on point. Making a false police report cannot make you liable for intentional infliction of emotional distress. It just can't happen. And there's multiple cases that say that, as well as federal cases that say that you can't get the state, you can't state a federal cause of action just because someone called the police, even if he knows it's false. Multiple cases. And, he's got arguments that were ignored by the district court. And it was briefed and was argued. Even the pleadings, the responses to the summary judgment motion don't address these issues. They just say, here's an affidavit from Mr. Alusta that says that Mr. Rubio made a statement on August 22nd, 06, a year later. How does that get to the jury on the false arrest claim? That's something that happened a year later. So, Mr. Rubio, can't pay for the transcript, can't pay for the judgment, and we would ask an opportunity to present the transcript to show that this is what happened at the trial. There was no evidence at trial.
Counsel, it's too late now.
Also, Judge, there was no evidence at trial that Mr. Rubio Alusta suffered any emotional distress at all. No medical bills, no treatment, nothing. All the testimony was about how he was untreated unfairly by the police. Nothing at all about damages. And the case law clearly says you have to have severe emotional distress before you can get even past the pleading stages. The person who makes the statement has to know that you're going to suffer emotional distress. How does Mr. Rubio know that someone's going to suffer emotional distress by an allegedly false police report? The case should never have gone to the jury. And, at one point in the trial, the judge granted a directed verdict on all counts, and then 5 minutes later, it changed the decision. And now I'm stuck. So thank you for listening.
Thank you, Mr. Maher. Mr. Sloat.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Willis Sloat on behalf of the appellee, plaintiff, Eduardo Alusta. Your Honors, as you've spoken here, I apologize. I did not actually reference that the summary judgment is subsumed. I did find that case law, but I have not practiced apparently long enough to realize how it would exactly be applicable in this case. But I believe the trial court denied summary judgment on these claims because there was evidence presented which raised an issue of material fact. That's specifically stated in the order, which is not cited or referenced, as far as I can tell, at any point in the appellant's brief. And that pretty clearly sets forth that there are two different claims for acting under the color of state law, which, you know, two different ways that could be done. He either was acting, you know, as part of a conspiracy.
Well, I have the same question for you. I honestly cannot imagine why that's relevant at this point now that Mr. Rubio has won on those points. It's not relevant to subject matter jurisdiction. The case proceeds. It's one can see from the jury verdict forms that the jury came to the conclusions it did on each of the counts, and so we're left with this intentional infliction of emotional distress point for which we have no evidence. You know, I have no idea whether the evidence would – I mean, it's a hard claim to win, but it depends on the evidence.
I agree entirely, Your Honor. That's why I actually, when I first entered this case in, I believe, early July, filed a – it was a secondary motion to dismiss the appeal, simply because I did not see any – primarily that was aimed at the violations. I think it's a Rule 28 for the simple failure to cite relevant case law, cite relevant portions of the record, and, you know, sought to have this removed and, initially – have the appeal dismissed in its entirety without going through a full briefing schedule on my client's behalf. And I reiterate that under Rule 38 at this point, that it seems like there's no merit behind this. The trial court granted summary judgment. As you said, it really isn't relevant at this point, but it granted summary judgment. The jury of people, the jury of the peers found that he was liable for intentional infliction of emotional distress. And there's absolutely nothing in the record or nothing in the argument that indicates that judgment was improper. Any other questions, Your Honor?
Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Anything further, Mr. Maher?
Very briefly, my brief addresses why.
Counsel, come to the podium before you talk.
Sorry, Your Honor. My brief addresses why the judgment was improper. The tort of intentional infliction of emotional distress is an extremely difficult tort to prove. Has no application to the fact pattern where you make a false police report. Has no application whatsoever. There's multiple cases that say that. You have to have severe emotional distress. You have to have knowledge on the part of the defendant that that's going to happen. It didn't apply.
See, the problem is, get back to it.
Strong.
How do we know that? How do we know what's not in the record? We don't know what's in the record.
Well, a bystander report would have been impossible because, my opponent wouldn't have agreed. That was my position anyway. And also because there was a transcript that he couldn't pay for. So I did try the case, and, I filed the appeal because I tried the case, and I know that there was no such evidence. And it's unfortunate that my client couldn't pay for the transcript, and I apologize to the court for that, but there was no evidence at trial as to severe emotional distress at all. It was all about, he was arrested without being heard by the police, and there was no damages, no bills, no medical bills. And intentional infliction of emotional distress, you have to have actual proof of damages as well. You can't infer it from the evidence. You have to have actual proof of actual damages. It's an intentional tort, and I've addressed it in my brief. Whether that's a good argument or not is for Your Honors to decide, but it was addressed in the briefs.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.